The Fan on Demand. Have you got game? Got game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, a show by gamers for gamers. On this week's show, we'll run the gamut of emotions. We'll make you laugh when we talk about Halo 4. We'll take you on a mental trip when Brian Calhoun reviews Fez. And we'll tell you the story about a little kid with big dreams in LA that will warm your heart.
Have you got game? The Lowdown.
It's that time of the week that I know you've all been waiting for, knocking off the 7 days off your calendar. That means it's time for another edition.
Games of Thrones is not on right now.
Quiet, you. It's time for another edition of Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Voice you're listening to is Momin Qureshi. That's me. Brian Calhoun's the one who interrupted me during the introduction and will pay by penalty of death later. And Christine Chubb, we need him for the show. And Christine Chubb sitting there obeying all the rules like she normally does.
That's right.
I appreciate that.
Hey, it was my fault. I just got confused. I thought you were talking about, never mind.
Don't mention. Don't promote other shows on our show unless we have people on to promote it or they're paying us for it. So unless they have people on to promote it. we've been talking about this NFL cover vote for Madden for a few weeks and we're down to two. And
it's almost over.
It's almost over. It's so close to being finished. And I think the guy that I thought would win it after Tim Tebow bit the dust is going to win it. It's down to Calvin Johnson from the Lions and Cam Newton from the Carolina Panthers. One rookie and one guy who was a rookie, both super players.
Is that even crazier than Peyton Hillis, considering he plays for Detroit?
No. Calvin Johnson is by far the best receiver in the NFL. He's a superstar.
True, but I've grown up in a world where Detroit has always been a laughing stock. It's actually, as a Bills fan, it's the one team I could always look down on.
Didn't you live through the Barry Sanders years, though?
No.
What are you, 12?
No, just
how did you not live through the Barry Sanders
years? Just before my time when I was interested in the NFL.
You weren't interested in it. That's different, yes. So. Well, no, Calvin Johnson is very much a super-duper power star, and I think he's going to win it. Carolina's kind of a strange team to have in there, but I think Calvin Johnson's going to win this, but we'll find out fairly soon. Other things going on, if you are a fan of video game music and you like to see it in an orchestral setting, you're in luck because the Video Games Live Tour is coming back and it's coming to Toronto on October the 25th at Massey Hall. And it's kind of a cool thing. I've never checked it out myself. We had plans to see it in Los Angeles last year when we went for E3, and we just couldn't work out the timing because we were working 18-hour days, and it was just so crazy that we didn't get it to work out. But I would like to see it. Have you seen it before, Brian?
Yeah, I saw a couple of his shows before. They're all really cool. If you've already seen one, it's always interesting to go back because he mixes up the arrangements all the time.
The he you're speaking of is Tommy Tallarico.
Yeah, Tommy Tallarico, which I believe, when I saw the press release that we got about this, he mentioned Skyrim music, I believe, and also Mass Effect music, which, cool. I don't know, I haven't played Skyrim yet. Would that be interesting?
The score in Skyrim is fantastic. Like, it's moving, it's exciting, it has a large variety, like, they really went out of town. And I think one thing I'm excited about, too, is that I love Massey Hall. Massey Hall is a great venue to have this at because it's intimate, and yet the sound is fantastic in it. So I think that it's a good choice.
I've heard from so many people that it's the best place to watch
a
show.
It really is.
And you called it sort of this orchestral sort of thing, which that's true. There's going to be an orchestra there, but that sort of just gives it sort of a stuffy feeling to me. It's not really that. It's a very live show. It's, you know, there's a lot of energy in the whole deal. You go there and your blood starts to flow.
that may be the best and strangest description I've ever seen
concert. It's a heck of,
it's more. It's more than just an orchestra, is what you're trying to say. There's more components to it. It's more engaging than just watching an orchestra play, which I think is still fun, but, you know, that's just me.
And tickets will be between $37 and $67.
And, get them. October 25th, Massey Hall. If you're living in other areas and you don't want to get to Massey Hall in Toronto, you can go to Kitchener October 28th, Ottawa on the 29th, and in Vancouver on November the 6th.
Yeah, there's some other tour dates which you can go to videogameslive.com and check out, because he's going to be going across Canada, starting here,
right,
working his way over to Vancouver. It's just that those are the cities that we know we have fans in, so those are the ones we mentioned.
All right, it took us 4 minutes, and I'm surprised Calhoun let it take this long, but we have a release date for Halo 4. If you could see Calhoun right now, you would see he is bursting with excitement. Because
that's so not true.
It is coming out on November...
You just lied to people.
The 6th. November the 6th is when Halo 4 is coming out.
At best, I'm cautiously optimistic about what Halo 4 is going to be at this point, because all the material I've seen so far, they're changing a lot of what Halo has looked like in the past. And to me, at least, that's sort of a warning light going off in the back of my head. If they're changing so much about the visuals, how much more of the game are they going to change? And will I actually recognize this as a Halo game by the time they're done? Which may or may not be a bad thing, but at this point, I don't know enough about what's going on to know if it would be a bad thing. I'm just cautiously optimistic about everything they've changed. Have you seen the pictures they put up of Cortana?
Mm-hmm.
She looks completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chief's helmet and stuff like that? This makes me seem like a complete other dork, but still. You know?
Yes, it makes you seem like a complete and utter dork.
There was a flow, there was a storyline, there was a world, there was everything that sort of made that universe interesting, and it looks like they're screwing around with that. You know, that's sort of the impression I get right now. So you can see why I'd be a little bit afraid of maybe things going wrong if they're screwing around with a formula that's worked so much.
Yeah, and I think this is the danger that you run into with a franchise like Halo. We all know Halo is one of the most popular video game franchises that there ever has been. Fans loyal to the hilt who love and eat and breathe and sleep this franchise. So I love that they're trying to take it in new directions, which is cool because I like that. I like when they freshen things up and add in new elements and stuff. But it's always risky because you have such a loyal, dedicated fan base that you could turn them off. I mean, we saw what happened with Mass Effect 3 and the big ending controversy and how so many people didn't like it and they were all upset by it. And of course, there's a different studio behind this Halo.
343 Industries, which is actually owned and set up by Microsoft when Bungie wanted to stop working on Halo.
Exactly.
Games, they made their own studio and said, okay, we'll just pick up and go. And this may end up being like a no-win situation for everybody because like you can only put up the exact same game over and over and over again and have it sell every time. It's the same thing's happened with Call of Duty. You know, the brand new Call of Duty Modern Warfare game, the huge Call of Duty franchise, it wasn't selling as good as Black Ops, which was made by Treyarch, which was considered normally to be the lesser of the Call of Duty franchises. So Guitar Hero is another example. Rock Band is another example. You put out the exact same game over and over and over again, you can sort of just destroy the market. So if they make another Halo 3, how long will people keep buying Halo 3 again? But if they change too much, then no one's going to be interested in getting the game. It's a no-win situation.
I disagree. I don't think it's saturation the way music games were, because music games were coming out, it seemed like every 6 months, even every 3 months, music games were coming out one after the other. But there wasn't a Halo game last year. Reach was the year before. So they've had a couple of years of break. And I think that's enough for fans to keep their interest in and
so how do you
keep
explain Call of Duty?
How do I explain what about Call of Duty?
Well, like I said, the last Call of Duty game, the Modern Warfare game, the big Call of Duty game in
Modern Warfare
franchise,
3?
Yeah, Modern Warfare 3, it's not selling as well as Black Ops.
Well, I mean, that's in relative terms, though, because Black Ops was the best-selling video game of all time. You can't keep setting that record. Black Ops is the number one selling video game in history.
I think if you're Activision, you're like a publicly traded company,
goal.
You have to.
No, that's your goal. You're right. That's your goal. But if you don't, it's not like it didn't sell. It still sold millions of copies. So they did make their money back, and it still sold like millions and millions of copies. It just didn't smash the record the way Black Ops did. So it's all right. You know, but you know what would make Halo 4 awesome, though, Brian?
The Flood?
No. Conan O'Brien. That's what, Brian. If you watched Conan this week, he had this amazing featurette where he goes down to the Halo studios and they decide that they're going to try to record parts of Conan in Halo 4. And it's this hilarious 10-minute feature. You can watch the full thing. We'll post it on our blog, the Got Game blog at sportsnet590.ca. But here's a little bit where they're talking to Conan and his sidekick, Andy Richter. And they say the situation that you're in is you're in a warehouse and you're loading one of these utility vehicles, these big, massive carrier jets. And you two are there and you're loading these. And these are the lines that they were throwing around to try to record.
My father thinks I'm a coward. Well, I think he's right.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you were saying. I was peeing in my suit.
Look, everybody, it's Master Chief. All right. Let's hear it from Master Chief.
What a...
It's the condescending laugh from Acty. Well, the condescending clap from Andy is so good.
That's the best part.
Andy's awesome.
I hope that makes in the game.
I really do, too. There are some really other funny parts where Conan goes through and talks about what he wants his costume to look like and different lines and stuff. And in typical Conan-esque fashion, it's pretty funny to watch. I think it's pretty cool. I feel like playing the other clip, though. What do you think?
You want to do it, just go ahead.
Okay, here's one more clip where Conan's discussing what he wants the voice to be like.
Can I use different pitches and tones, or do you want me to use my real voice, or do a character? What kind of character do you have in mind? Do you have an accent?
Oh, I'll be loading the crates now. Hello, governor. It is quite so much space.
So there it is, Conan O'Brien doing his
Conan
bits.
O'Brien. Hey, look, everybody. It's Conan O'Brien. What a jerk.
Well done, Brian. I don't think in the 4 years of this show, you have never made me laugh that hard. Well done. And that was a genuine laugh on my part. That wasn't even condescending towards you.
I have to say, considering that's not even my joke, that's a little depressing. But whatever. Moving on.
So Halo 4, November 6th. Potentially featuring Conan O'Brien. You can watch that full video on our blog, Got Game Blog at sportsnet590.ca.
And I already know I'm going to buy it day one regardless.
That is true.
I just hope it turns out to be a good Halo game, because they haven't all been good Halo games.
No. They haven't.
ODST was not that great.
No, Reach was good. I liked Reach.
I really wasn't a huge fan of Reach, but at that point I was so invested in the franchise for them to go back and change everything.
Let me ask you as a Halo fan. What matters maybe more to you? Because to me, I'm not a huge Halo fan, but I enjoy the franchise. And what always means more to me is the multiplayer modes and whether those are enjoyable and whether those are worth going back to time and time again. Like the Headhunter mode from Reach was amazing, and I kept playing that over and over and over again. Or as a Halo purist yourself, are you more concerned about what the campaign mode and the storyline turns out to be?
I'm more concerned about the campaign.
You are,
because
okay.
I have enough faith in certain studios to sort of pull out decent gameplay in multiplayer modes and 343, considering they have so much of Bungie in them. I'm okay with that. I'm sure whatever they're going to do for multiplayer is going to be fine. I'm concerned about that main campaign storyline and how that's going to work, and if so much is going to change, but time will tell with that one.
I guess. It's interesting that you say that, because I actually prefer the multiplayer modes, but I mean, that's because I'm not invested in the story, so I understand that. Another big franchise that we kind of thought was done.
I thought we were told was done.
Yeah. And it's speaking of awesome franchises, I loved all three of these games, God of War 1, 2, and 3. 3 in particular, which I thought was fantastic. Because,
very beautiful game.
Yeah, because that was, you know, the big one on the PlayStation 3 where they really kind of pushed it to the max and gave it a good story. Well, it looks like there's another God of War coming, because Amazon let it slip that another console God of War game is coming. They accidentally did this when they published the product page of God of War Ascension a day early, and Game Informer was either the first to notice it or the first to be tipped off by someone. Sony has put up a post on their PlayStation blog confirming the date, although not mentioning Amazon's mistake or the Game Informer story. The only information on the blog is the announcement of a live streaming event on Monday, April 30th at 8 a.m. Pacific, which is 11 hour time, Eastern Standard Time, where Sony will be giving out a glimpse of what's in store for God of War The Ascension. The stream will be happening on the PlayStation blog for anyone interested. So, looks like our buddy Kratos could be back soon, which I think could be cool. Because I think that's a story that didn't really wrap up yet. It's still got more in it. I think that they can do more stuff.
I hope it's a PlayStation Vita game. I'll be honest.
Huh, maybe. You know what? And that would not surprise me. At the very least, I think it'll come with a feature that the show has where you can pause and continue playing.
Well, I should actually add one thing. We've seen the Amazon page, so we know that it's a PlayStation 3 game. They have the box art for a PlayStation 3 console right there. So I'm not saying that. I'm just also hoping that there's going to be a PlayStation Vita version of it, because I'm kind of struggling with stuff to play in my Vita these days, considering I've played the heck out of Tales from Space Marine Blobs Attack and the Rayman Origins game again. And after that, there are a few cool things like Unit 13, but the titles, they got to come a little quicker. My Vita has sat maybe for the last week and a half just on a desk, unused, just because I just haven't felt compelled to pick it up. There's nothing that's making me pick it up and play that.
And that was the issue with the PlayStation 3 when it came out, so they better start pumping up those titles. We got a lot more to come on this show, including a story that'll warm your heart and some reviews coming up a little later on. That's all coming up on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you in the game?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Momin Qureshi, Christine Chubb, Brian Calhoun around the table. It's more of a triangular shape now that we're down one member. But hey, you know, that's cool. I like shapes. I like geometry. Geometry's cool. You know what else is cool? Being able to design...
Not that intro. I'm just going to say that intro is not cool.
Well, too bad. We're going with it. What else is cool is being able to design your own iOS game and getting some money for it. How would you like to do that? That's kind of cool, I think. Sketch Nation Studio is a game, is a I guess the thing that will let you do it. It's an iPhone game creation tool / game that's launched last Wednesday. After nearly 2 years of development, it's easy to make games, and once you do, you'll be able to sell them off for real profit on the Real App Store. And I guess you could kind of think of it like a Little Big Planet for an iOS, where you can draw and customize parts in the games. And it doesn't seem that complex with creation as Little Big Planet does. But Brian, you've been messing around with it. What do you think?
It's a little misleading, because Little Big Planet was the example they always kept giving us when they were telling us about this game.
Right.
And in a sense, yeah, okay, it is kind of Little Big Planet-esque. But the Little Big Planet, what they do is that they give you all the building blocks of their entire game.
Right.
And they say, here you go. Go ahead, make whatever you want. And there's been some really cool things. There's a guy that made the actual computer, a very basic computer that you find from the early 40s, but still a computer.
Right. People have made racing games, sports games, adventure games. Little Big Planet, that was what drove that game, as a creation engine.
You can really go out there with Little Big Planet. In this case, it seems to be more like asset creation, which is the most expensive part about video game design, is actually making all the assets for different games. And what it is that they've done all the coding for like four or five different game types, like a game where you run, Gravity Guy, I believe the iOS game, something like that. There's games where you can sort of fly through the environment, stuff like that. There's a game that you can make that I made that you just jump up, a series of Jack and the Beanstalk levels where you're going higher and higher and higher over these like blocks that I designed and made. And I did this all. I made a game in like 5 minutes or so. And it's not exactly creating a game. It's more, like I said, asset creation. And if your game is really, really good, because they take a look at all the games, if your game is really, really good, then they will publish it underneath their brand. And then that will go to the iPhone store. Not everything actually makes it to the store. If they don't think it's good enough, they will not publish it.
Right.
But every game does actually get published to their internal store, where you can buy it using in-game currency that you sort of get from playing different games.
Which
and
is also cool.
Games. Yeah, which is
also cool.
Definitely cool. That's where my game, Poorly Made Platformer, was the title of my game. That's where it resides.
Nice.
It's probably the most indicative title of a game I've ever heard.
Rip Off the Robot jumps from a series of platforms up into
the
air.
Did you name him Rip Off the Robot?
Didn't have a better name than that.
No, that's
a pretty awesome name.
That is a wonderful name for a robot. Wow. Calhoun's on a roll this episode.
I'm good at naming stuff. I named the show Got Game.
Oh. I think Rip Off the Robot, I can see like merchandise and stuff. Let's talk. I want to be your manager. I want to get all your subsidiary rights.
Yeah, for the game that you can't actually play unless you download the app and buy it through there.
And did you have to pay for this?
You will have to pay for it right now. It was free, at least as of this recording. It will be free, how they do with these iPhone games.
Right.
It comes out free so that people download it and it jumps up through the iPhone store. And then, it gets to the top. Then they start making people pay for it once it's at the top of the store. But if you hurry right now, you can probably get it for free still.
I think it's kind of cool. I mean, what kind of game would you guys design? I would design one about three friends who record a video game show every week.
You can't. It's not one of the five game types that they have in there. It's not the running or the jumping or the flying.
I would make one about three friends who run and jump and climb into a studio every week to record a video game show.
Moment, your originality is killing me.
I will say this, though. The tools inside the game, at least for a beginner, are kind of cool. I drew everything inside the game, the background, my character, the platforms, everything, just on my iPhone, which was really cool. But screen so small does not allow for great artistic endeavors, if you will. So what you can do is you can draw all your stuff outside of the game and you make copies of it. And you can import those into the game, and this sort of uses the game to assemble everything. I'm not really sure you can make your own music, though.
Do you know if it's available on tablets, like the iPhone, iPad,
Right now, it seems to only be on the iTunes Store.
Right.
And that was a question I had myself, because, so you make yourself a great platformer, and you put it on the iTunes Store. Awesome. There's about 10,000 of those you have to compete with.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you get on something that's not as, relatively speaking, I should say, not as backed as, say, the Android store or even the Windows store. That would be a great place for something like this.
Yep, that's true. You're listening to Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Brian Calhoun and Christine Chubb. Across from me, I am Omen Qureshi. We've been talking about some cool stuff on this episode, and now we're going to go to a story that it'll warm your heart. And it, honest to God, has made many grown men weep. And I'm not ashamed to admit that I did cry a little. Not cry, but I was welling up some tears when I saw this. And thank God I was in the comfort of my own home. Had a day off from work when I watched this video. Christine, you were telling me that you saw this video. We're talking about this video called Kane's Arcade. I know many of you probably seen it already. If you haven't, we're posting the video on our blog, Got Game Blog, at sportsnet590.ca. You were telling me you've actually seen this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it was posted by a few people I know in who I have on my Twitter who are in the music industry and who are really into... obviously into videos and whatnot, and they said, just watch it. This is, you know, amazing. Like, this little kid's life was just made, and it'll just kind of warm your, like you said, warm your heart and just kind of not, you know, reaffirm your faith in humanity or anything dramatic like that, but it's just neat how the internet can be used for good when so often it can be used for bad.
Exactly. And what the story is, it's about this little kid, I think he's 10, named Kane, who lives in East L.A., and his father owns kind of like a auto parts junk shop where people come in and get stuff. And so he built his own arcade in the front of the store out of cardboard. Everything is made out of cardboard. So he built a skee-ball machine, a soccer game.
Basketball.
The basketball, a claw game. He built it all himself, and he runs this arcade, and it's all out of the front of this store. And so this 10-minute short movie is made about Kane and his father and his first ever customer, who, of course, living in Los Angeles, obviously, happens to be a filmmaker. And he decides to make this this short film about Kane and his endeavors, and we're just going to play you a short clip right now. And this is the first voice you're going to hear is Kane's father talking about his son and his ambition.
Nirvan came back one day when Kane wasn't here, and he told me, "You mind if I make a short film about Kane's arcade?" I said, "Well, actually, it's kind of like a little joke around here because you're his only customer."
I was blown away. Kane's only sold one fun pass. Like, the fun pass is an awesome deal.
So Nirvan said, "Well, what if I can get him a couple customers?" And I said, "That would make his day. If you can get him one customer, he'll be happy."
Now, I don't want to give away what happens, but it's pretty, like, that's the point where it turns into a really heartwarming story. Mm-hmm. And what really catches you is how determined this little kid is just to be at that store every day with no customers.
And just how inventive he is.
Yeah.
And how, you know, he wanted to make his own little arcade. And it's just, you know, the love of the video game, the love of the arcade environment, and just how much joy something simple as a little game, a little basketball net, you know, taped to a cardboard box, how much fun that can be. And it's especially in a time where there's so much complication and so much technology in video games, where it's just like, no, here's a little box, here's a little hoop, here's a ball, go for it. And it's just so fun.
Yeah, and I mean, that's such a good point, right? It's that we've spent so much of our show talking about technology and the best things and refreshing things and getting a top of the line. This kid comes out with the most basic of basic ideas. And it's just, it's fantastic to watch it. And I'm telling you, we're planning to be in Los Angeles for E3. I want to make a trip out to Kane's Arcade.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind trying to find it as well.
I want to go and play at this kid's arcade. And he talks about the fun pass. The fun pass is so great. Because he says one play for $2. No, one play for $1. Or you can get the fun pass, which is 500 plays for $2.
And it lasts all month.
And it lasts all month. And so, Calhoun, you're giving me a look like it's just such a...
Well, we really have time with everything we have to do in L.A. to go to Kane's Arcade.
Make time to go to Kane's Arcade.
I highly suggest anybody listening to this, go to the Got Game blog at sportsnet590.ca. Take the time to watch this 10-minute short film. It'll add a little bit of warmth to your heart in these cold, Hoth-like times.
I will say this, though. The kid had invented some sort of security system where he writes numbers on these cards that he gives away, and then he has calculators that he's taped to the front of every box, and apparently he can just do a quick...
Math formula,
and figure out whether or not the passes are actual passes, because they're all supposed to come out with the exact same number on them, or at least he's written the number on the card someplace.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's the kid's ingenuity.
Yeah. He's really thought all of the different aspects through.
Yeah, his ingenuity is fantastic.
But it's his perseverance as well. Like, I mean, even in the clip we showed, his dad's like, you know, the joke is that you're the only customer. And yet he's gone to so much extent to make security, to make all these different games, because he's just like, one day.
Yeah, one day it's going to happen. And what a great dad, too, eh?
Yeah,
in the film.
Seriously.
They're so supportive and so behind him and everything. So there is that.
That's
go and check
it
out.
To put it.
Huh?
I don't want to ruin it, but at one point he said during, you know, the film that he was happy that Kane was doing it because it kept him out of his hair. So
yeah, that's a typical dad reaction. Well, or a typical parent reaction over the summer.
And of course, you know, if you don't know, East LA isn't the greatest of neighborhoods.
It's not so safe
there. It's a pretty terrible neighborhood, actually. So I'm sure this dad is thinking that if my son's going to go in there and spend 8 hours a day trying to make this arcade work and he's not going to be on the street doing some stuff that other kids in this neighborhood are doing, knock yourself out, kid. Go for it. And so it's a great thing. It's a great thing. Also, the game Darksiders 2, if you're waiting for it, you have to wait a little longer. It's going to be moving its release to August of 2012 rather than June. Did you play Darksiders?
Yes, I did.
And?
And I'm completely disappointed about what Darksiders 2 is going to be compared to the first one.
You like the first one?
The first one was kind of like a ripoff of The Legend of Zelda, to an extreme degree where you'd have similar sort of items in both games, and you sit there conceptually going, this is not a good thing. This possibly can't turn out well. And you play the game, and it turns out to be a great experience that I have never heard anyone say anything negative about. I'm sure there's someone out there, but I have yet to meet the person. And then Darksiders 2, what's supposed to be some sort of loot-driven game, which I'm not entirely sure that's exactly what I want. I pretty much want more Darksiders. I want you to rip off The Legend of Zelda, maybe the Twilight Princess this time. You guys pick. I don't care. And then I could play that game, but now it's going to be some sort of loot-driven mess, and I'm not entirely sure it's going to turn out the way that they want to, and they need it to turn out pretty well, considering how much THQ is
investing in this.
Investing in it, and also considering like every other month, there's a story about how they're about to go under, considering they're, you know, not making that much money.
Yeah.
So they really need this one to shine. And I hope it does, because I like THQ. I like, you know, Saints Row 3rd, which they make. You know, they make the UFC games.
Yeah, Undisputed.
They have a number of quality franchises, and they need every one of them to, you know, shine the next year to survive. Not totally sure that this is going to be what everyone who played the first Darksiders wants, though.
All right. From Calhoun's mouth to your ears. There you go. We don't have a lot of time left, so I kind of want to save this Ubisoft story because it's kind of interesting.
We can save it for the next segment.
We do want to mention that there was a... Did you know there's another Silent Hill movie coming out, Christine? Did you know?
I had no idea.
Did you know there was a first Silent Hill movie?
I did, actually. I think I may have actually seen the first one, too.
In theaters?
Yeah.
Wow. So you're the one.
I am.
I'll be honest. I had no idea that Sean Bean was a part of the one we were about to talk about.
Yeah.
Honestly, no idea.
So Sean Bean, who is very popular these days because he's the lead character in Game of Thrones, and many other people would know him as Boromir in the Lord of the Rings series.
I know him as Alex in that James Bond GoldenEye film, the very first one.
So he's done his share of fairly notable roles. The new movie is called Silent Hill Revelations 3D. Why are we talking about it? Because it was filmed right here in the T-Dot Toronto, T-O, whatever you want to call our city, Hogtown. I don't know what else it's going to be called, Toronto. Home of Moomin. Yeah.
Everybody calls that.
The Home of Moomin, yeah.
Even though you don't live in Toronto.
Even though I live in Markham. The release date's been moved, and it's coming out on October the 26th. So if you want to see it, there it is. Sean Bean styling in Silent Hill, what's it called? Revelations 3D. By it being called Revelations 3D, I would assume it's in 3D, and it'll be out in theaters soon. But we do have more stuff to come up on Got Game, including a very cool story, or not cool, but interesting story about how somebody is claiming that the idea of Assassin's Creed was ripped off. Ooh. It's all coming up on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you gameplay?
Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. That's what your ears are tuned to. The voice you're hearing right now is that of mine, Momin Qureshi, Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb, completely triangular formation. We're going to talk now about a story, Brian, which I'm going to let you introduce, but the idea that a very popular video game may not be as original as you think it is.
Yeah, actually, there is a novel out there right now called Link, written by a man, John L. Buzzwinger, I believe, Buzzwinger?
Buzzwinger.
There you go.
There, what she said.
Leave it to the European to pronounce it properly.
So he wrote a novel in 2002 called Link, and basically, it's kind of like, or at least he's saying that it's kind of like the Assassin's Creed franchise to the point where he feels like he has been ripped off.
Mm-hmm.
And he cites a number of different passages from his book. One basically says, oh, hey, we can hook you up to this machine and we can experience a full memory in perfect synchronization with the brain. Another one's like, well, if John Wilkes Booth had a child and we found the descendant of that child, we could hook them into this machine, and we could go back to that day and even smell the gunpowder. So You know, there's a lot of similarities. I believe also in his book there's something about the Apple of Eden, which is a huge part of the Assassin's Creed franchise. Mm-hmm. And from the outside, he may have a case there.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, though, you know, with the advent of the internet, we're getting to see a lot of stuff that we probably would not, like our parents at our ages probably would never have seen. Like,
right.
When our parents were our age, there probably was no way we would have found out about Kane in his arcade.
Of course.
That we talked about in the last segment.
Yeah. Without the internet, Kane's arcade isn't a story at all. It's not a story in the least.
It doesn't leave his neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know. Like, I can see what this guy's saying, but there's also the idea that these ideas are kind of just out there.
And this is how I feel about it, that one of the big sort of discussion topics on Twitter and Facebook in the last couple months has been the Hunger Games, the books and the movie, and how, oh, this movie Battle Royale, this Japanese movie, came first, and the Hunger Games is this big ripoff of this movie Battle Royale. And I'm like, people, none of these ideas are original. Not the Hunger Games, nor is Battle Royale. They all stem from tons of books and films.
The Running Man by Stephen King.
Yeah, and Lord of the Flies and all these other things that came before that. So I feel like all these ideas that he's saying are ripped off from his book are not even original ideas in his book.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I mean, in order for them to, they would have to actually find out the fact that somebody would have accidentally or purposely read this book. Like, it's just sometimes people just have the same ideas about stuff, and you know, there may be some similarities, there may not be, and maybe the creators of one and this guy all happened to watch the same TV show one day that sparked the same idea.
Yeah.
You know, all it takes is one little thing, and there's only so many individual ideas out there. I mean, yeah, you know what, you can't deny that there is a good deal of similarity to it, but I think to sue is a little erratic, but then again, you know, in the States, everybody likes to sue.
And I never want to dismiss a guy of his intellectual property. And if he feels that he has been ripped off, then, you know, that's why the legal system's there, to go through the process so that the judge can decide whether he was, in fact, ripped off or not.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I just think that a lot of ideas out there aren't original ideas. And the idea of historical fiction has been out there for quite some time. And you take actual historical events and then presuppose them in different scenarios and stuff, and so whatever.
Well, you guys remember Portal? When
yep.
Portal came out in 2007, does anyone remember the game Prey, the original game Prey?
Nope.
There's a sequel that's supposed to be coming out. Actually, they just mentioned it a little while ago. People worried that it was going to be canceled. If you've heard that, don't worry, it's not going to be canceled. They're just delayed it.
Yeah,
I can't remember exactly off the top of my head what the date is that they're delayed to, but good news is at least it's not canceled. Well, okay, so Portal came out in 2007, and a lot of people looked at it and went, oh, wait, these portals, where have I seen them before? Oh, I saw them before in Prey, when Prey came out like 6 months before then. But the thing is that, you know, in game development, you're getting like 2 years to get up to the point where you actually have something polished. Like, if you were to work on portals, it would take you a while to get that technology. You can't look at a game that was released like 6-9 months before and take that idea, put in your game, and keep going. Those ideas had to have been designed individually, parallel, but separately.
Yep, you see it in Hollywood all the time, right? We're right now in the state where two different Snow White movies are going to come out within 60 days of each other,
mm-hmm.
and probably 30 days of each other. Both were pitched to separate studios. They both got greenlit. And I'm sure when they were already months into the process, each studio looked at each other and were like, oh, come on. Come on. And then, you know, the studio that had Kristen Stewart as theirs was like, oh, come on. Because, you know, she's terrible. But that's just me. But I do actually want to kind of give that movie a chance and see whether it's going to be good or not. I saw the other one. I took my nieces and nephew to see it. And
and you're like, Julia Roberts? Oh, come on.
No, I was like, Lily Collins. All right. That's pretty good. I like that. But yeah, I mean, it happens all the time where people pitch ideas. I mean, look how many vampire-themed things we had for such a long time. And then, you know, it happens. There's a running theme. Fairy tales are big right now, but not only with Mirror Mirror, but there's a whole bunch of TV shows and stuff. And so these concepts get thrown around and run around over and
over.
So
we will now be hiring ourselves out as the defense for Ubisoft to go up against, what was his name again, Christine?
Oh, John L. Beisweiner.
Exactly. We will be seeing
you
in court. You
are now officially the Got Game linguist on this show.
My three classes in German have paid off.
Da. No, that's Russian.
That is not German.
That's terrible.
Do Svidaniya? No, wait, that's Russian also.
Anyway.
No, isn't that Polish? Nazdrowia?
This is getting
this is terrible. We're way off the... Well, I know you might not have been able to figure out in the last 5 minutes, but you are listening to Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and we are indeed a show about video games. Believe it or not, we are. And as such, we're going to turn it over to Brian Calhoun because it's time for reviews. Calhoun, you got a little bit of time here to talk about the game Fez. What is Fez aside from an awesome character from that 70s show?
That part is debatable, but as far as the video game goes, I'm not entirely sure I can actually explain it. Not because I don't want to.
That's going
to
be great for our show.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome radio, so strap yourself in. Fez is this strange, strange game. You pick it up. It's $15, and you start play it, and you go, okay, this is a platformer with a really interesting...
Sorry, is it downloadable?
Yeah, it's a downloadable only game on both the PlayStation and the Xbox.
Okay.
And you download it, and you think, okay, this is a platformer with a really cool hook. The hook being that you can change the dimensions from a two-dimension game to sort of a three-dimension game and sort of use that to make your way around the world. And this is going to be hard to explain, but sort of imagine if there's a three-dimensional world and you can manipulate that by making it go left or right and change the position of where you can see everything. And then imagine this view that had sort of two different platforms far away from each other. Just because I sort of changed the view has moved to where the buildings are now sort of touching. And even though they were far apart, now I can just sort of walk across from one to the other. Even though I'm really sort of traveling a distance that I shouldn't be able to, now just because the view has changed, I can. So that's sort of what you expect the game to be. And you go, oh, that's pretty cool. That's an interesting thing. And then you start to play the game, get deeper and deeper into it. And you realize that that's not really the game at all. That's not the point. You know, that's what they have been showing for two or so years. But that's not the point of the game. It's actually a puzzle game. And I'm trying to think about what I can sort of say and not ruin it for you, because you have to discover a lot of things. There are a lot of hidden secrets. I mean, the guy who made this, he's a Canadian, Phil Fish. He's in Montreal. He sort of made his own alphabet, and you kind of got to decipher it. There's a bunch of things you have to decipher, but I think saying the alphabet's probably the one I can say without, you know, to give you an idea without really ruining the game.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so many things inside this game that you peel away the layers and you realize, okay, it's not really a platformer. The platformer doesn't really matter. It's this puzzle game. And as you play it, you play the first time, you beat it, you know, you play it the next time. You earn another power, because the first power is being able to manipulate the world so that you can sort of move around and change the view and then move items around so you can platform your way through levels. But the next time, you get another item that lets you take a completely different view of the world and see things you wouldn't be able to see before. And then you play it again, and you beat it, and then you... Another thing, it's these layers just keep getting ripped away, and you keep seeing underneath it what it really is, and you find out you're really supposed to be solving these puzzles. It's strange. I think Phil Fish may be the Stanley Kubrick of video games.
Nice. Suddenly you perked Christine's interest.
I do like myself some Kubrick.
You do. It's true. You actually perked my interest, because that's the idea of this game being a bit more of a puzzler than anything else is actually what intrigues me, because I love those kinds of games.
Yeah.
I like that it's become it's a physical representation almost of the concept that perception changes your reality.
Yeah.
Literally.
Mm. Yeah.
I think that's cool.
Exactly. It does. And This
show suddenly got a lot deeper than it's ever been.
The strangest thing is that, like, none of this is explained to you. Like, no one said anything about this before the game came out. It's just people started to play the game, and then people started to realize, oh, wait, what we thought was a platformer, that's not really a platformer. That part doesn't really matter.
It sounds like this is a good hidden fact that you didn't know, but it's a good thing.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's a good thing to find this out, because, I mean, it's like, how cool is that? Like, you expect a platformer to be a platformer, and actually... midway for the game, it's the greatest surprise ever in video games, I think.
So talk to us. Like, are you prepared to give it a score? Like,
I think it's wonderfully put together.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly some problems with the game.
You've played a few games like this lately, eh? Like, Journey was like that for you too. Where you're like, it's cool and it's awesome, but I don't know what to say. 2012 has been the mind trip for Brian Calhoun. He's been taken on a trip.
I think this is a little easier to explain than Journey was, because Journey was just such Journey is such a personal experience.
Yeah.
Like, everyone will play it. That's why I didn't want to recommend it to anybody. Zach was like sitting there going, so you're saying this game's great, but you don't know like who's going to play it? And you're like, yeah, I don't know who should play this game, because the experience is so personal. I can't make that decision for anybody. I can't make that suggestion for anybody. It's up to them. They have to go take a look at it and then realize.
So you're saying that about this game as well?
This game, no. This game, I think the person who would really enjoy this is the person who's gone like, I just want something that I've never experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
I want something that is so far out there that I have to put a lot of time into this game, because you do have to invest a lot of time to get
right.
to like a significant part. Like the platforming part, which kind of goes away and doesn't matter, that's like a good 6 or 7 hours.
Oh, wow. That's pretty far into the game.
And then you come back, you play the game again, and you realize, oh, wait, you know, this entire time, all these other things have been here in this room, which I haven't seen because I haven't gotten this other power that I got after beating the game the first time.
Hmm. So no score then, just good game, but no score.
If I was pressed for score, I would say it's a 7.5 because it does suffer from issues. There are some bugs that crashed a couple times on me. I was able to break the game and fall outside the geometry. I guess my biggest problem with the entire game is that a good puzzle needs to be something that everybody with like a little bit of common sense can be able to solve. And I don't think that's the case here. I think here you have to go out and you have to do research, or you have to go on the internet, or you have to do something to solve some of these puzzles, just because your personal experiences throughout your life probably would not be enough to give you the information you may need to solve these puzzles. So that being said, they're not bad. It's just that there's some puzzles there that just you really have to go outside and research to figure out. So 7.5. I love the fact that you rip everything out, there's a whole other game underneath. That's
right.
Awesome. And it's put together pretty well. It's just, it's not a perfect game.
Okay, there you go. 17.5. Amazing. Give it a 17.5 out of 10. 7.5 out of 10 for Fez. Christine, we only have about a minute here. We're going to review Trails Evolution next
Trials.
Week. Trials. Why did I say Trails? Trials. Trials.
There
Evolution.
Are fun trails, though.
There are. We're going to do a full review next week, but I just want to get your initial thoughts because you played it for a bit this week.
I did. It's, as some of you may know, it's a successor to the 1990s Trials HD, where it's motorbike riding. But it's funny because when I started playing this game, I didn't realize how difficult it was actually going to be. And I literally yelled out, I was like, why don't I know more about physics? It was so frustrating.
We have a video
at times.
Of that. Oh, no, we don't.
No, I don't. But it's fun. There's lots of really nice looking courses, and it's not just indoors the way the original game was. It goes outside.
Oh,
it
cool.
takes you to all these different things. The game now curves. Although the courses will be in roundabouts, you can do all kinds of fun little tricks. It's really a good time. Like, I laughed so hard at so many times that I crashed out, and the crashes are just hilarious at times where you're like, oh, that would have hurt so much.
I played the original on Xbox Live. I think it was in the early part of last year with my cousin Zephyr. We played it quite a bit and we had a good laugh, and I'm looking forward to playing this one. We'll have the full review of that next week.
And this one has some really cool moments at the end of every race. You get blown up, which is always fun.
You do. It's very entertaining.
And there's also a level editor, which I haven't had time to really fool around with because I was playing Fez, but you can actually build your own levels, and it does look pretty cool.
One of the things too is that it also shows interaction with the other people you have online who've played it. And I sent a text message to Zach, and I said, seeing your little dot name zoom by me in almost every level is so infuriating.
Alright, so that's going to be coming up next week. We're going to give a full review of that game. And that does it for this week's show. What do you know? Time flies by. For Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb, I am Omen Qureshi. This has been Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.